Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum, and welcome to the first week of summer. Hey, this is Ed Fallon, your host, and we're broadcasting from the hot heartland of America, Des Moines, Iowa. We got this content, of course, that is important to you wherever you live in the U.S. Underwriting for our program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods, and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Bumper music here provided by the Des Moines Irish Session. So later in the program, we're going to be talking about the growing and bipartisan opposition to data centers. And we'll also be talking about big oil and how cozy it's been with the White House. Surprise, surprise. And then we'll talk about eggplant. Yeah, believe it or not, we're going to talk about eggplant. But first, joining me today, Charles Goldman. We're going to look at a guy named Zach Lahn, who most of you have probably never heard of. He is the Republican nominee for governor here in Iowa. And don't feel bad, because most Iowans haven't heard of him either. In fact, he's probably more well-known in Kansas, which is where he's from. He's only lived in Iowa for a couple of years.
He registered to vote here July 2024.
Yeah, so he's got barely 2 years of experience as an Iowan. Somehow he won the Republican nomination, but by somehow I mean lots of money and dissatisfaction with the candidate that seemed more status quo-like, even though he was endorsed by Trump. I mean, that was the big surprise, I think, that U.S. Congressman Randy Feenster was endorsed by Trump and yet lost the five-way primary to Zach Lahn.
Well, I think, interestingly, you know, the national media made a big deal about that Trump had endorsed him. And, you know, recently Trump's endorsements have kind of worked out, or, you know, like he did like with Paxton, where the day before or a week before, when he knew that Paxton was going to win, he said, "I'm endorsing him," down in Texas.
Yeah, who beat Cornyn. Yeah, and right. he came out very strongly and early against Thomas Massie in Kentucky, because Massie has been a very strong critic of Trump.
Yeah, in that case, he really wanted to. And he sent Vance down, I think, to support that.
And surprisingly, it didn't hurt. So, and then also Cassidy in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that I think the national media missed the point. It wasn't that Trump had endorsed him. It was the fact that Feenster, like a lot of the people in the Republicans in the House, vote with Trump policy 99%+ of the time.
Right.
I mean, even Cornyn, who we went after in Texas, voted with him 99% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes you wonder whether, you know, the conservatives in Iowa, particularly the rural conservatives, the farmers, in particular, are very disenchanted with Trump because of what his policies this time around have done, which was no different than the policies the first time around.
But that's the implication that the national media were trying to put on this.
Well, actually, they seemed more focused on the idea that it was more about going against Trump than about that maybe even here people are connecting the problems with their local economy and blaming it on Trump.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway.
So yeah,
Zach Lahn, by the way, it's Lahn.
Lahn, whatever. Lahn, yeah. You see, I don't even know how to say his name.
Right. I mean, I didn't know who he was either.
Okay. But there's an element of the Iowa Republican Party vote that is it's a very extreme Christian conservative perspective, and again, even within that rubric, there's there's variations. You've got people who are, you know, pretty reasonable folks who happen to have that perspective spiritually. But it's a very, very strong element of the Republican base. I'd say overall, in terms of the overall, you know, electoral strength of that vote, it's probably, what, 20%? Maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe. But within the Republican primary, it counts for a lot. And the big players in the Republican primary that are of the Christian evangelical persuasion went with either Adam Steen,
right,
or Zach Lahn.
Lane.
Lane, sorry. I knew I'd get it wrong twice. But the toward the end, when people started seeing that Zach Lahn had spent all this money and was doing better than Adam Steen in terms of challenging Randy Feenstra, they kind of, I mean, and Steve Dace was a good example. Steve Dace had endorsed Adam Steen. He's a talk show host here in Iowa, and a very, very, again, very extreme. If you go on his program and he asks you what's your favorite book and you don't say the Bible, you're pretty much you're pretty much done.
Right.
So he's really extreme, and he's got horrible anti-gay perspectives. I'm sure he'd be fine with eliminating the women's right to vote. I don't know that for sure, but I'm guessing.
Put women back where they belong.
I've been on his show a couple times, and it was never a good experience. Yeah. But the bottom line is, you know, he supported Adam Steen, but when he saw the writing on the wall and the money coming in from Lane.
Yeah.
from Zach Lahn to support his own campaign, he, like others in the evangelical community, switched. So I think...
Well, let me just give you my experience with having listened to one of the debates.
Okay.
The Republican primary debates. One thing notable was Feenstra didn't take part in any of them, which I thought was unusual. They, of course, spent a lot of time on the abortion question.
Right.
And they did ask, and of course, all of them, and I think the other candidates, what, Eddie Andrews, the...
And Brad Sherman.
Yeah. Everybody was pretty much in lockstep. You know, nobody was going to step out of what they had to say, given, as you point out, the nature of the Republican, the religious preferences of the Republican voters here. You know, they talk about the heartbeat bill, which always drives me crazy because there is no heartbeat at 6 weeks. But, you know, we won't talk about that. But then they ask the question of, do you think that women who terminate pregnancies after 6 weeks should be, brought to trial for murder? You know, which is not the law here.
No, which is crazy.
Right.
Absolutely crazy.
Well, all of them who were there, you know, obviously minus Feenstra, gave various versions of the answer that they're kind of down with it.
Even Eddie Andrews, who is by far the most traditional Republican.
Right. Eddie Andrews actually said it would depend on the circumstances, which is such a mealy-mouthed answer,
is,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But pretty much everybody else said, well, there has to be, you know, some thought to how there might be. They all kind of gave a version of there might be circumstances where that would be appropriate. I don't think any of them were willing to say that it should be a blanket policy.
But no, so Feenstra was not at any of the debates, and that is kind of what is often done by a perceived front runner,
right?
You know, avoid any situations where you might say something compromising. Well, apparently, it hurt him a lot, I think.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is one of the... I don't understand what his strategy was. I mean, I guess he thought he had all the name recognition, you know.
He has great name recognition in the 4th District. Mm-hmm. And not much beyond that, you know?
Yeah.
And again, nobody else had much name recognition. And certainly Lane, from Kansas, didn't have a lot of name recognition.
You know, I since we were going to talk about this, you know, on this segment, I went on the internet and tried to kind of find out more information about him, and he's kind of a cipher. I mean, I went to like his LinkedIn page, and there's like nothing on it, you know. And I found out that he and his second wife, who he's presently married to, run some sort of what's clearly a religious affiliated school in Kansas.
And she was married to either David or Charles Koch's son.
Right. She was married to Chase Koch.
Right. And then she divorced Chase Coke to marry Zach Lane.
That's correct. And there is
the, I don't know the backstory to that.
Right, I was just going to say, in fact, both of them were married to other people when they initially got together. You know, I don't know where their marriages were, whether they were separated, what the deal. So I don't know anything about whether, like, you know, with Paxton's wife, it was a biblical issue, you know. But right. So nevertheless, yeah, they run this this K through 12 religious school on the campus of Wichita State University. He still lives down there. He flew like 30 times up here.
37 times.
Yeah. During
in a private jet.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's because they've got a blended family of seven. You know, so the Vances will be very happy because they're probably pronatalists like the Vances are. But they own this house in Belle Plaine.
That's in eastern Iowa.
Yeah, it's southeastern Iowa. Yeah. You know,
it's central Iowa, east central Iowa.
Yeah. I used to stop at the gas station there off of 80. Okay.
Good for you.
That's how I know Belle Plaine.
Okay.
It's not even in the town. The town's like 20 miles away from there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they own this, and evidently the house on the property is the real valuable thing. It's like a historic house. It was actually in some sort of reality show where they did some update to it, you know, in 2023. I don't know. This is the kind of stuff that they, anything else to know about this guy. So the two things that came out during the campaign, and one of them I guess you'll probably want to talk to because I think you probably already know this thing. There was an ad late in the campaign from Feenstra's side about the fact that that Lane had a investment interest, and actually was one of the officers of a company. I think the company's called MedTech.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'll say is that the slogan of the company in terms of this product they were selling was, put a ring on it. Okay.
So, all right.
So this was in this ad from Feenstra. And for those of you who are still unsure what we're talking about, we're not talking about a wedding ring. So, and this, so of course he had to answer, Lane had to answer about this. And he kind of said, I didn't know anything about this, right?
Well, let me ask you this.
But unfortunately, he signed the papers of incorporation in like 2022, and the patent on the product was applied for in like 2021, right? So he clearly knew exactly what they were selling.
Yeah.
Maybe the fact that his item was being advertised on Pornhub would have given him a clue to what his product, the product was.
Yeah.
But he kind of came out and said, I didn't know anything about this. And so Feenstra jumped all over that. The other thing to know about him, because I don't really, I mean, personally, I don't care. I mean, whatever, you know. He should have just said, yeah, I did it. I think people would have actually thought more of him if he said I did it. But, you know, I guess it doesn't fit with running a religious school.
But, you know, I think that the big story to me here is that the Republican Party primary voters, again, we're talking about, what, 15% of the registered Republicans?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I mean, it's a very small slice, and it's a slice that skews very hard toward the, you know, the very evangelical Christian perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that explains to me why Zach Lane won.
Because he's marketing a sex toy?
No, because they're willing to look, if they could look beyond Trump's, all Trump's, you know, mm-hmm. terrible moral lapses, they can look beyond that.
Right.
And I actually thought that Adam Steen had a shot at pulling this off. I thought Randy Feenster was going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't sure who he was going to lose to. And I think it's because, again, a lot of the heavy hitters in the Republican Party switched their support from Steen to Lane when they saw the money. And, you know, they've made, strategically, from a Republican point of view, they made a huge mistake. Because now the guy running against Rob Sand here is a carpetbagger. I mean, through and through. There's no way. I mean, I guess he was born in Sioux City,
yeah,
Iowa, but didn't live there long, you know?
Yeah.
His wife didn't register to vote in Iowa till a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, he registered 2 years ago. It's going to be hard not to see Rob Sand and the Democratic Party in general have tremendous success at convincing people that this is a hardcore extremist carpetbagger who might not even get elected in Kansas, given his extreme views.
Well, that's the question he's been asked, is why didn't you run in Kansas? And he didn't really give any answers to that. The other thing I'm interested in is, you know, he worked for he worked for Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch's
group.
That's
the David and Charles Koch.
And, you know, I mean, they're the usual libertarians. It's all about less government, you know, let the market run the show. You
except
know,
when it comes to handouts for corporations.
Well, that yes, that's true. But you know, the Kochs are not, they're not really Trumpers. I mean, they're more true libertarians than a lot of these other tech bros are. But the thing I hope somebody asks him is that if you look at the platform from, you know, Americans for Prosperity, because this wasn't touched on in the Republican primary, they believe in promoting immigration. You know, and they really should ask him that question at some point. Okay, you work for a foundation which is for promoting immigration. Now, where do you truly stand?
So Americans for Prosperity is kind of like the Cato Institute in that case. They're very conservative, but kind of with a libertarian perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the main difference between Cato and AFP is that AFP is down big on oil and gas. You know, what's good for oil and gas is good for America.
Well, and that's because the Koch
brothers. Well, it's good for the Kochs, exactly.
Right. And we'll be talking about how good oil and gas is for the U.S. later in the program. But, Charles, your prediction in terms of how this plays out in terms of the general election here in Iowa.
I mean, I think Rob Sands has shown the ability to win as the only Democrat to win when the Republicans have run the table. I don't see it being any different this time around. And I agree. I think it was a huge tactical mistake for them to pick Lane.
For the Republicans.
Yeah, a much safer pick, you know, would have been Steen.
Feenster
or Steen.
Feenster.
Yeah.
No, I don't think Steen would have been any safer. Well, maybe a little bit. He's not a carpetbagger, at least.
No, but I think he's very much in line with conservative, you know, fundamentalist beliefs, and he's, you know, I don't know if being associated with Kim Reynolds is good or bad. I mean, obviously,
well, it's probably not that good, bad. Actually. She's not running again. So.
Right.
And she is supposedly the most
unpopular governor
in
the United States, which is hard to believe. But
that takes a lot.
With some of the other people
out
there.
That takes a lot.
Yeah. I mean, some of the people down south, I mean, I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah. Well, and there are people in so-called blue states that are not popular either.
Yeah.
And some deservedly.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we got to take a short break again. This is Ed Fallon, Charles Goldman with you here. Back in a minute, and a reminder that underwriting for this program is provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. More information at 515-229-5085.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon and Charles Goldman here. Underwriting for this program provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. Before we talk about the growing resistance to data centers, Summit Carbon Solutions, that's the company that wants to build a pipeline, well, from Iowa up through South Dakota into North Dakota. I think they have some plans to go through Minnesota and Nebraska as well. They wanted to sequester this carbon dioxide at a site not too far from the Bakken Oil Reserve. Of course, they said they had no intention of ever using it for enhanced oil extraction. But all of a sudden, they've given up on that because they can't. South Dakota said no. South Dakota actually elected an entirely new leadership in the legislature that voted for a strong eminent domain bill signed by the governor that's going to prevent that pipeline from ever going through South Dakota. So they decided, well, we got to find some other place to store this stuff. Why not Wyoming? So now they want to run it west through Nebraska, which I say, good luck with that. I mean, Nebraska is where pipelines go to die. I mean, mm-hmm. The farmers and landowners and other people there, they just, they're good at stopping these things. See the Keystone XL pipeline for details. But so we've talked about that, but here's an interesting twist in this as well. You know,
wait, and before we go,
what
is Wyoming a particularly quiet tectonic kind of place?
You mean geologically?
Yeah.
Is any place quiet anymore?
Well, like fracking isn't a remnant not truly a remnant. I mean, Yellowstone sits in the caldera of a volcano.
Yeah.
It would seem to me that that's probably not a place that you'd want to be pumping. I mean, look what happens in Oklahoma. They have
because
these earthquakes
of the
because of all the fracking.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, it doesn't seem like a great idea.
No.
I mean, actually, to me, what's going to happen here is the Trump administration is just going to say, to heck with the sequestration. Just pump it out into the air.
Right. What's the difference? It's good for trees. Well, no, because they want it. They want to use it for enhanced oil recovery.
Yeah. No, I know.
And probably, and maybe for other purposes too, but there's a market value to that CO2, so they don't want to just pump it into the air.
Yeah.
But they might. I wouldn't rule that out. But here's a new twist. There's a pipeline company, again, a company that manufactures pipelines called Wellspun Tubular, and they have filed a lawsuit against Summit, a lawsuit worth $15 million if Summit were to lose, because apparently Summit had commissioned them to produce about 785 miles of pipe. And when Summit ran into regulatory delays because of all the people in Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota saying, no, we don't want this thing, then once the delay started, Summit asked Wellspun for, give us 6 extra months before we actually start, manufacturing the pipe. Wellspun said, sure, okay. And then Summit wanted another delay. And when Wellspun said, this has kind of gone on enough. You made an agreement with us. We're going to start making this pipe, and they had other commitments to make as well. Mm-hmm. They basically said, yeah, if you're going to go back on our agreement, we're going to sue you. So right now, the decision may have been already reached by the time we released this program. We were recording it a little bit early, but the bottom line is, Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline is in big, big trouble. I mean, they keep getting shot down everywhere they turn. I don't think they're going to make it to across Nebraska to get to Wyoming. They can't get to North Dakota because of South Dakota. And now they've got another pipeline company suing them. It's with a really strong case.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong case. So, I thought all along that the experience gained in resisting the Dakota Access Pipeline would prove very helpful when this became clear that Summit wanted to build this pipeline. And I believe that's true.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Interestingly, and I was at one of the very first, Kathy and I were at one of the very first couple of county meetings, and I noticed that one of the entities listed in support of Summit's proposal was the Brett Dublinsky law firm, the same law firm that represented the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked them, I said, hey, is there any connection between you guys and DAPL? They said, no, none at all. Well, what's this lawyer here? why do you guys have the same lawyer? The bottom line, people, resisting authority, wrongfully applied authority, resisting bad ideas, resisting the destruction of your environment, your health, and in this case also your right to your property, can pay off. It does, not always, but I think more and more, that kind of resistance is showing to be effective. Anyway, We'll see how effective it is when it comes to data centers, because there's a lot of that happening right now here in Iowa, but all over the country, all over the world, in fact. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get worse as more and more of these companies, you know, dig deeper and deeper into increasing their capacity. We're going to see phenomenal levels of expansion. And when there's one in Utah right now that is, what, the size of several Manhattans?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Manhattan is no small island.
Correct.
And there's some estimates. Again, the company has been kind of coy about really how much water it would use, but some estimates are that it would basically use all the water that is currently being used by the state of Utah.
Yeah, I mean, The thing is that there's huge amounts of money, mostly private equity, private credit money, that's being put into AI. In fact, if it weren't for AI, the stock market would probably be a third lower than it is now. Almost all of the growth in the United States in terms of equities is related to AI. And we still have no idea really where it's going to fit.
No.
But the specific issue of the data centers is that if you're near the place that they're being put up, it's a horror show. The construction, the dust, you know, it's just
the noise. The visual. Yeah. I mean, this is not, there's nothing pretty about it.
No, it's just that this is this blocky building with a
huge
bunch of big fans and air conditioners on them. And the problems they cause are, number one, they're only doing this coalescence of of these computers in data centers because they got to cool these things down, you know, and they're very high demand on electricity, which has to come from somewhere, which initially when they were talking about these data centers, what'd they say? They said, well, the data centers were going to provide their own electricity.
Huh.
Well, in some situations they are, but what did they choose to do? They chose, in some cases, to reopen nuclear reactors.
And to build more coal plants.
Well, that we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
As you say, to reopen defunct coal plants. And, of course, if you think about it, what would be the most sensible format to be able not to be drawing from the grid, which people are drawing from? Because if you're going to draw from the local utilities, what happens to the prices for the people who are drawing from the same utility? Prices go up, right? Because the local utility has to figure out a way to make more electricity also. So if you were going to actually, you know, power a data center, and, you know, if you look around Des Moines, you can see where they put them. If you look out west, you can see where they put them. They put them in the middle of nowhere, you know.
In the Des Moines metro, they're actually fairly close to the metro.
They're on the edge.
And they've gone to suburbs. Mm-hmm. That are historically willing to take anything of this tax base involved, and mm-hmm. yet they also they get these jobs and this tax base, but they're also giving them tax.
Well, but this is just
abatement.
Like pipelines. Yeah. All the money and all the jobs is up front. After that, you don't need many people in the data center to run the data center.
Right.
You know, it's just like a pipeline. So, but let's get back to the question of if you were going to choose a way to power a data center, what would you choose?
I would take water buffaloes and I would attach them to a wheel turning water, and I would have the buffaloes walk around and around as the water pours into the gizmo that they turn. And that's how I would do it, Charles.
Okay. In reality, what would make sense?
Nothing. It doesn't make sense to have these things.
It doesn't matter. I mean, they're coming. So what would you, as an environmentalist, prefer?
Solar.
Right.
Put solar panels
roof. In terms of decentralized power production, solar with batteries would make sense, right?
Yeah. I still like the water buffalo.
Right, I understand. Alternative would be solar with a fossil fuel backup, probably gas fired, because coal plants are super inefficient for peak power.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a third efficiency compared to probably over 50, 60% for using a gas turbine. So the setup would be perfect for using solar as the base, right? But of course, they're not doing that. They're going with opening up, I think, one of the Three Mile Island nuclear plants, like in Pennsylvania,
yeah.
You know, or they're you know, out in the Southwest, they've been buying up these old decommissioned coal plants. And, you know, the other problem is that we weren't ready for this. The power grid in the United States is going to collapse. Well, it's ancient.
It's worse in some places. Like, I think Texas is probably the worst. But, of course, California is a big problem,
okay,
too.
But here's one of the ironies. You know who produces more renewable energy in the United States than
Texas?
Texas.
Yeah, I know.
Not California. No. Not New Jersey, which was weird.
Well,
not,
I was fairly high up there, too.
Yes. But, yeah. But Texas produces a huge amount of renewable energy.
Yep.
The other problem is water, right? I mean,
Texas does not produce a lot of
water. They are, you know, if anybody's following the story of parceling out the water from the Colorado to the various states that have call on
we
it.
We talked about that here
a couple weeks ago. And they're at the point now where San Diego is going to sell desalinated water into the system to make up, you know, for the amount of water that California takes out of that basin. Where's the water going to come from? You got crazy things going on out Southwest.
The Great Lakes.
Right.
Which is a terrible idea.
I know. They're going to build this huge aqueduct from the Great Lakes. Or, you know, but there's so many bad ideas. I mean, the Chinese own land out there in like the desert, in the semi-arid part. And they're growing alfalfa out there.
Because they're able to irrigate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're absolutely right. The data centers are just a horror show.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where SpaceX may come in, because you know one of the ideas, you know what?
Pump that water back to the Earth from Mars?
No. You know what Musk wants to do? He wants to put the data centers out in space. And he'd run them completely on solar, right? Because they will always be, you know, they're geopositional. They will always be facing a light source.
Right.
You know? So it's pretty ironic, you know, with the oil and gas industry that, you know, this is what we have to do.
I knew I should have bought some of this stock.
If it gets done, who knows? You know?
Yeah.
But that's the plan. Yeah. But you're right. And these are the reasons why people don't want those things near them. Well, they don't want the warehouse detention centers of ICE.
Or the carbon dioxide pipelines.
Right.
I mean, the resistance, that has been such a hot political issue here in Iowa and elsewhere that it's going to be a prominent conversation in the upcoming election. I think data centers are going to be a prominent conversation as well. I mean, and I think, I don't know how many states are dealing with as bad of a situation as we're seeing in Iowa, certainly Louisiana, Utah, you know, a lot of other places, but I think it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean,
and not just water and
If you live in the Midwest, you don't really have a feel for how dry and arid so much of the American Southwest and West can be. And that even out West, where there can be torrential rains, you know, that happens maybe every, you know, 6 or 7 years. You know, I lived out in California and went through 2 droughts of 5 years duration. And I only lived there, you know, for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of water out there. And if there is, it's extraordinarily unpredictable as to when you're going to have it.
Hey, got to take a short break here. Ed Fallon with you and Charles Goldman. We're going to talk about big oil when we come back from a short break. Back in a minute, a reminder that underwriting for this program provided by Western Optometry. More information at 515-789-3055. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers. Formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit circleofpeacemakers.com. At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon and Charles Goldman with you here, folks. Underwriting for this program provided by Architecture by Synthesis. More at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, Charles, so we were talking about the pipeline, the carbon dioxide pipeline a while back, and about how the data centers are being powered. And how is the White House being powered? And I don't mean literally in terms of energy, but it seems like a lot of the fuel that makes the White House tick is from big oil interests.
It would seem that way. I mean, I think I find that although it's strategic, there's something obsessive about Trump's climate denialism. I don't think it's just a pragmatic, you know, response to who's paying him. Because he does things that just, you know, they're kind of unfathomable. For instance, they wanted to close down a bunch of offshore wind projects.
Trump did, in the Gulf, and off the coast of New England, too.
And off the East Coast, which would have powered, like, millions of households.
And wasn't the one off the East Coast already, like, 75%
correct.
Complete?
Right. So just for all of you out there who weren't too happy about the $1.776 billion that was going to go, and may still go, to the politicization fund, I'm not sure you can be too happy to hear about how many billions of dollars were spent paying people to stop producing, stop building wind farms offshore, that many of which were a good way to being built.
So my take is that Trump is merely responding to his donor base, big oil. They don't want the competition, so he's going to do his part, you know, through the executive branch to take out that competition.
Well,
am I stating the obvious?
No. I mean, I think that's true, but there are so many things that go on with him. For instance, yesterday I was watching one of, you know, those press conferences where there's a gaggle of people around him, some of whom you identify, some of whom I have no idea who they are. And Lee Zeldin was going on about clean, beautiful coal, okay? Because there was another executive order, which they got that guy who explains to him what every executive order is.
Yeah.
He says, I love when he asks, I don't know who that guy is either.
So what did I just sign?
He says, and we need this why? I said, well, I can see he did a lot on this. But anyway, so Lee Zeldin is going on about clean, beautiful coal and how the crazy Democrats are getting in the way of clean, beautiful coal. And it was an executive, and of course, they caught, just as usual, they caught Trump sleeping again. During this, as Zeldin is literally standing next to him and talking,
he was just paying attention.
He was concentrating. But so anyway, it was they gave out $700 million under the National Defense Production Act as an emergency to restart 13 coal plants and to build the first new coal plant since 2014. Hmm. You know, and again. It was all about basically allowing the data centers to use non-renewable energy in preference to renewables.
Yeah.
You know, so it's so completely irrational. But part of it's also to keep electric cars out of the United States. I mean, if there's not enough, if data centers are soaking up all this electricity and rates are going up, that's a disincentive for people to own fully electric cars. And eventually, you know, the Chinese cars are going to get into the United States at a price that's going to make full EV highly competitive. Also, you know, the electric cars in China can fill up their battery in 20 minutes.
What about the Tesla?
Tesla takes at least 45 minutes on a supercharger, and usually more, you know, but...
Will that improve over time?
Well, they're going to have to get the battery technology from the Chinese. But no, I mean, I think 50% of the new cars bought in China are fully electric now.
Yeah.
You know? So, but anyway, again, just irrational. And then they're closing down this oceanic system of monitoring the deep currents. These are sensors that are anchored like at 9,000 feet, right? You know, in places. And they're monitoring... And this the
what does it cost to close them down?
It'll cost them. Yeah, it, I think they cost like $48 million to keep open, and it'll be three times that to close it down, right? Yeah, and they were put there in 2016, were supposed to be there for 25 years, and now they're closing them down. And it's not because it costs so much to take care of them. It's because it's climate denial. It's about climate denial. Yeah. So yeah, let's not find out about what's happening to that current that goes like from Greenland all the way down to Florida that has a huge determinant.
The Amic, Gulf Stream is the easier way to describe it.
Well, it's not exactly. It has a scientific name. But yeah, that's not important to know, right? Because that's a huge determinant of weather in the whole world, right? You know, and it's also important for a fishing industry to know what's happening. No, that's not important. We got to get rid of it because it is pathological. He's pathological about climate denial.
But to me, it's all about fealty to the oil industry. I mean,
I understand that's what you think.
But why?
Because he gets ideas in his head, and it's just like the Iran war. I have a feeling, right? I feel like this is going to work. And look how many times I've been right. And once he latches on, he's an 80-year-old guy. It's not just his personality traits. 80-year-old people fixate on ideas.
I would think if a big oil executive or collective of executives were to say to him, hey, this is not a good idea. This is not going to help us, and it's not going to help our industry, our bottom line. So just don't do it. I think he would obey. I think he's totally locked in with what they want.
How does closing down a oceanic monitoring system hurt oil and gas?
Because again, if you don't know what's happening, you can go ahead and continue to produce, and you can just drill, baby, drill. So yeah.
But you know, the funny thing is people on the right believe it's happening. The majority of people believe it's happening.
Sure, but a lot of them won't say that it's human caused. I mean, a decreasing number will have that perspective. Most people understand that it is human caused. Well, this just makes it easier to walk around with your fingers in your ear, la 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 la, and pretend you don't know what's going on. And that's exactly what Big Oil wants. Big Oil wants us to continue to move forward with blinders about the climate crisis, so they can continue to drill and open up new areas of drilling, drill deeper, use carbon dioxide for enhanced oil recovery. You know, drill in the bottom of the ocean, heck. You know, they're talking about that.
Yeah.
This just plays, right? I don't see how it's not all about money.
Well, I think from their point of view, it's all about money because they don't want to lose their investment. Because all the oil that remains behind in the ground is a lost investment.
A very cynical way to look at
it. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, they certainly from their point of view. But, you know, the big question I have is, their own scientists told them it was happening.
Back in the 70s. Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's not like we aren't all living on the same planet. And if you really think we're going to be able to move human civilization to Mars, it ain't going to happen.
Then your name is Elon Musk.
Yeah. It ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen in, like, the next millennium, I don't think. You know... Yeah, everybody watches Star Trek and thinks, you know, we can do that. And also, I mean, what's it going to be like living on a planet like that?
I don't know. I'd rather live in South Dakota.
It's true. I love that commercial.
Yeah, right. But that was a reference to something we shared last week. But Trump has no moral compass on this. Anyway, it's no moral compass, period. But there's no moral opposition to windmills. It's all based on what he's been told and is told on a regular basis by the biggest entities that are funding his campaigns.
Well, he's also told all the sycophants around him who, you know, Lee Zeldin used to be actually fairly reasonable about climate change. But now he's, you know, the EPA head. He's totally in the bag, you know. I mean, talking about clean coal,
an oxymoron. Yeah.
I just wonder how these people go home at night, look at themselves in the mirror, and say, this is what I've been reduced to. You know, this is the lack of integrity. This is the lack of self-esteem I've been reduced to.
That's where the whiskey comes in.
I guess. But, you know, it's just sad. And it puts to a lie that any of these people, you know, they all talk about their grandkids and everything else. They don't care about anything. They don't care about their children. You can't care about your children if you're saying, hey, yeah, put up more coal plants. Yeah. You know, just, give them asthma. Give them pulmonary disease. Kill, you know, probably 13,000 people a year with things associated with
that. Yeah, we'll go back to one point. I don't know whether we agree on this. Yeah, I think it's just about money, and specifically oil money, that drives Trump's opposition to windmills, opposition to maintaining the regulatory system that monitors the Gulf Stream. You know, continued conversation, continued utterances about, you know, climate change being a hoax. I think it's all about oil money, and I point to four things. Again, his 2024 campaign, oil and gas interests provided at least somewhere between $75 million and $96 million, just from one source.
He got more from Elon Musk.
Right.
He got like $200 million, I thought, from Elon Musk.
But in terms of big interest groups, this is...
Yeah, I mean, they're a big interest group.
He's also got this pro-fossil fuel agenda that's been, you know, that's kind of based on that. And then he's got his own personal investments. He got there are not just him, but I guess there are, 17 White House aides that have a total of $2.25 million in stocks in major oil companies like Chevron, ExxonMobil. And then, you know, who's advising him? The American Petroleum Institute has... maintain very close relationships, not just with Trump, but with previous presidents, including Biden, including Obama. You know, oil has always been a big player in D.C. politics. I just think they're more so now than ever before. And now they've got a guy that has no need to think for himself or think independently or challenge one of his biggest sources of income.
I mean, I don't disagree with that. But I do think, when you're dealing with Trump, a lot of it is his vibes, you know. This is kind of how I feel. And as he's gotten older and older, he gets fixed on these ideas, you know. And he hates being, he never changes course, right? So since he's come out as being against climate change, you know, as existing, he can't backtrack. He sees that as weakness. So he just goes full bore. Because... This is what he ran on. If you remember, this is how he ran in 2015-16.
Well, he's doing the opposite.
It's a Chinese hoax.
Yeah, but he's doing a lot of things the opposite of what he ran on. You know, he's not going to start wars, right? Prices are going to come down. When I talk to people who voted for him, that's a lot of the concern, is that he's not doing what he promised he'd do. He's doing the opposite, in fact. But, you know, I think when it comes to, you know, climate denial, yeah, he's been pretty consistent about that.
Yeah, this is what he believes. This is what he believes, so I'm not changing my mind.
And I'm not sure he really
changed my mind.
I'm not sure he really believes in anything. I think he's adopted that position because it was the position of the corporate interest in big oil and gas that wanted to fund his campaign.
Well, I think the other element is this. He's a big believer in, that we got to... don't you remember, it was the second campaign where oil and gas under the ground became our liquid gold, right? Yeah. And he's got this notion that, well, if we extract all of this, we're energy independent. If anything, what the Iran war shows is to the American people, the price of oil isn't determined in the United States, right?
Yeah.
The price of oil is determined outside the United States. Because if the oil companies can sell oil for $100 a barrel because the Strait of Hormuz is closed, they're going to sell it for $100 a barrel. And they ain't giving you a break. They're not giving you the hometown discount. You know? So it the only thing it helps is that you don't run out of oil for the most part. But you still got to pay the price because they'll just ship it out. And if you don't want them to ship it out, then you're going to turn yourself into a situation where the government says you can't ship oil out of the United States. Those same interests are not going to be too happy about hearing that, you know. But, I mean, I hear what you're saying, of course. But this is true of tons of industries in the United States. Yeah. The money is sick. The amount of money is sick that's spent in our politics.
Charles, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Appreciate the conversation. Folks, we'll be back in a minute. Kathy is going to join me. We're going to be talking about eggplant. Charles, you like eggplant?
I kind of do.
Good. We'll stick around. Okay. Hey, underwriting provided by Dr. Kim Holding with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Kathy Burns is with me, and she's prepared to talk about eggplant.
Well,
for some reason.
Every once in a while. I love food history. I love just knowing
and I love eggplant.
More about individual foods. And I thought about eggplant now because we're already getting blossoms on our eggplants
yep.
outside. And when the grandkids are visiting here, Ed, you like to sing a lot of silly songs. The kids go nuts. They dance. They sing along. One of their favorites that they request is called The Eggplant That Ate Chicago. And it is a...
Based on a true story.
Or perhaps future story. It's a quirky, jazzy song. It was performed and written by... Well, it was performed first by Dr. West's Medicine Show and Junk Band. It was not a hugely popular band. The song was written by Norman Greenbaum. He was the author and performer of a song you might recognize called Spirit in the Sky, which is a song I enjoy.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about the eggplant itself.
Okay, not the song.
Not the song, but I thought that's the cool history.
It's a fun song.
Or the cool connection to it.
Yeah, where's the name come from?
Well,
it's always mystified me. Shaped like an egg?
I think in the U.S. it got to be called eggplant because it's shaped kind of like an egg. But most languages refer to eggplant as something similar to the French word aubergine, which is basically purple thing. That word was an outcome of a lot of versions of Sanskrit that means plant that cures the wind. And yes, they're talking about flatulence.
Really? So that's why you should eat beans with eggplant with your beans?
It wouldn't hurt. And three ways they can do that. They contain prebiotic fiber. So that's the non-digestible substance that provides food for the probiotics. You know, probiotics are good for your gut. Mm-hmm. The prebiotic fiber feeds them. They are lower in complex sugars, such as those that of, you know, cabbage and broccoli and such, the ones that can ferment and cause gas. And they are, eggplants are about 90% water.
Right.
So they help keep things moving, if I may word it delicately.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I didn't realize there was a Sanskrit connection to the word. Did they come from India originally?
Originally, they were, well, the first mention of them was in a writing of a Chinese poet named Wang Bao in a document called The Slave's Contract. And it said this.
What year was that?
It was in about 59 BC.
Wow.
And this writing was a humorous piece about the grueling tasks of a servant. And here's what it said. In the second month of the year, the spring equinox, separate and transplant seedlings of eggplant and scallion. So that would be a chore that the servant would have to do.
So did it come directly from that part of the world to Europe?
Pretty much originated. It's confusing if it was China or India, and it reached Italy by about the 14th century after going through Spain a few centuries earlier. Europeans didn't really discover it till the 16th and 17th centuries.
And now it's really popular in Italy, France. I'm not sure where else.
Every country.
Here in our home, it's really popular.
Every country that uses eggplant has their own spin on the flavorings, of course. There's a teeny tiny eggplant called the patio baby. It's about 3 inches big.
You mean the fruits are like 3 inches?
The fruits are 3 inches big, and then the largest one is the giant Barnum. That is from India, and it might get up to a circumference of 26 to 28 inches. It's huge.
So like 2 feet long or wide or circumference. Yeah, wow, that's huge. Yeah, and we grow a couple types here.
Mm-hmm.
We've had several types over the year. I think our favorites tend to be the bigger bulbous ones, but we've grown some of the thinner ones as well. Like those well enough.
I like the ones that are uniform width as you grow them, because when you cut them up to roast, they're the same width and can bake more easily or roast more easily.
So I'm aware that at one point eggplant were considered poisonous, like tomatoes.
Yeah, because it looks like a nightshade.
Ah.
You might get sick if you ate a whole lot of the leaves or the full, but you'd have to eat a lot of it compared to, like, if you eat a potato leaf, you might get poisoned. One leaf.
Wow, yeah. Okay. I've never done that, and I probably won't.
Don't, please. And another fun fact is in the 13th century, the Italians thought that eggplant caused insanity. And this is where, cause and effect versus, just coincidental relationships. They noticed that when eggplant was in season and people were eating a lot of it, they became more violent than when it wasn't in season.
Maybe because it was hot?
It was hot.
Okay, yeah.
It was hot.
Right.
And that makes me laugh because, the Shakespeare play Romeo and Juliet begins with a dialogue about how hot it is and how people could get into fights easily, and indeed,
my favorite way to eat eggplant is eggplant parmesan. We often make several and freeze them for the winter and have them, in January, February. What's yours? I should know this, but I have to ask.
I love to make the eggplant parmesan. This past year, I really got into just cubing them, tossing them in some olive oil and different seasonings, love cumin, and roasting them. Those cubes also freeze well.
Eggplant, folks, eat it up, but don't go crazy. Hey, thanks, Kathy, and thanks to the rest of our production team, Sherry Hardina, Forrest Dederman, and Charles Goldman. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session. And underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and Real Estate Agent Joe Henry. Also Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. This is Ed Fallon, host of the Fallon Forum. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.